Welcome to the M&A Zing, the podcast for anyone buying or building small businesses in the UK and Europe. Each week, we bring you real conversations with acquisition entrepreneurs, operators, and advisors, plus breakdowns of real business listings where we dissect what makes a deal work and where the risks hide. So whether you're searching for your first business, analysing your 100th listing, or scaling a whole co, you're in the right place. We're back this week with another buy-side breakdown, and this time we're looking at something a bit different from our sort of owner-managed SMEs. We're looking at an AI music creation SaaS doing around $700,000 in revenue, profitable and priced at a level unusually accessible for a tech product in such a fast-growing space. Different kind of business, but we'll break it down in the same way we normally do. So what's real, what's risky, where the opportunities might be, and could the buyer for a company like this end up?
Indeed. It's an interesting one. This one's on acquire.com. I think it's the first one we've done from acquire.com, but big fan of what Andrew and the team have built. Just goes to show what 11 million US in venture money can get you. They've built an amazing product at acquire.com, and with our paltry half a million of angel money, which we're very grateful for in the UK ecosystem, we're doing our best to build something equally competent. So this particular listing stood out because of its low multiple. This really kind of impressed me because they don't want a great number of turns of EBITDA for it. That was the first thing that got me concerned. Do we think, Alfie, that we've identified which company this one is?
I think so. I looked at the one that you sent over to me and I've done a bit of digging around and... Yes. I mean, the thing that Acquire do quite nicely is they list the competitors. So it gives me a nice list of companies to rule out. And given the size, some of the other few details that we pulled out from this and ruling out, some of the other big names that we probably know, so Yasuno's and Jammables and so on. I think we could be pretty confident on who this is.
Okay, awesome. Good. Well, then let's try not to break any confidence or malign anybody unnecessarily, but... Yeah, so this purports to have 3 million users.
Yes.
Users, not subscribers, but from which they are doing $559,000 in profit, which is none too shabby, $695,000 in revenue.
So that's about 80% profit.
Well, yeah, so as you'd expect from a SaaS, right? You'd expect it to be high margin. But the thing that stood out was they only want 3.5 times revenue as a valuation. So they're asking for 2.4 million for what should be a bleeding edge tool. And SaaS's are normally attracting what, 6, 8, 10 times revenue because of the 80% gross margins?
Yes.
So why so modest in their valuation?
I mean, that's what stood out to me first is the low multiples. But I think once you dig into the context, it does make a little bit more sense. I think the number here that gives me pause and is probably why that multiple is so low is the slow growth. So they are at about 2% annual growth at the moment, which is effectively flat, especially for a SaaS product. Now, it's difficult because they were founded in April 2023. So to go from zero to, 700K to a trailing 12-month profit in just over 2 years is excellent. And they must have hit some growth levers and done very well along the way. It's what's slowing them down to this 2% halt. Where the concern is. And that's probably why they are being more reasonable with their multiples.
Flip side of that, though, is they haven't gone to zero. Like, it wasn't a flash in the pan. They didn't just appear... capitalized for a moment and then vanish. They have sustained, and I would argue in a sort of D2C, B2C type context here, where they're effectively a curiosity on the one hand that becomes a kind of, habit for some creative community. And, they're going to have its loyal member base, but, the conversion from trial users to paid subscribers, there's got to be a fair old churn on the subscription. So to be replacing them and converting and having a sort of continuous top of funnel, hats off to them. But yeah, they definitely plateau with only 2% growth per annum.
Yeah, and I think with any tool like this, it kind of reminds me of the early days of the App Store, right? And there were so many apps coming out and it was a bit of a novelty and there were so many people trying it. And then it kind of boils down into a community of people that are going to pay for it and use it. So they said they have about 3 million users, but Acquire do a lot of things really well, but this kind of bracket. So they subscribers there between 1,000 and 5,000, which is a fairly wide bracket. So it's putting their conversion rate from 3 million users somewhere between sort of 0.07 and 0.13%. So the conversion rate is low.
Yeah.
There is a huge difference between somebody who has seen a funny meme or heard of an AI artist and gone out and searched for this and tried it once, and somebody who is going to pay for this and use it on a regular basis.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's probably, it's a difficult one to be in from a marketing point of view, because you want as many people to come in and try it as possible. But I wonder if maybe that next step for them might be to move away from that and to drill down into specializing, maybe, you know, pick a route and really go for it. If it is the company that I'm thinking, they are fairly broad and general, and they kind of treat themselves almost like a novelty to a certain extent. And maybe,
well, so many of these are playing that novelty card because it is so leading edge, right? I mean, I in preparing for this analysis, I spent quite a lot of time going down the rabbit hole with these different tools, and
yeah,
probably spent far too long, according to my wife, on several of them. And there is a fine line between science and magic. You know, this stuff, super impressive what it's producing, you know, and kind of worryingly heralds the death of human creativity which you know, that's a whole other conversation, which I'm sure we'll get into. But my point is, it was a curiosity. I didn't pay for any of them. I just used my free credits on about five different flavors of these things. Okay. To compare the results. So I'm sure I'm not the only one that sort of, like, you know, just put a toe in the ocean on this one. Who is going to win the race? Because you mentioned the early days of the App Store, and there was, like, you know, it lowered the barriers to entry. Everybody was able to spin up an app, but actually the strongest survived, and you know, there was a sort of consolidation, if you will, a washing out. So I think that's maybe where this particular wave is getting to, is like a maturing of certain providers, again, probably correlated with how much funding they've had.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think funding's going to be a real big driver of this, not only for customer acquisition, but for retention, because in this world of AI models, whoever has the most money to train is going to have the best product. You know, and over time, that quality is what's going to drive the retention. So if it is the company that we think it is, there are other firms out there that have had almost the same in funding that these guys have had in revenue in the last year, right? And that's really tough. That's going to be really tough to overcome. So yeah, I think that's probably where the winners will lie, is who's had the most money, which is not the, you know, startup dream that we would all hope it would be. But yeah, sadly, I think it's just the reality of large language model training.
Well, tellingly, the seller says they wish to divest in order to go and start a new venture. So, you know, that typically is code for, I have either lost interest, or this isn't as lucrative as I thought it would be, or I better get out quick before someone comes and eats my lunch. And the big one coming over the hill looks to be Eureka. Eureka.ai, which is brilliant, still also missing a trick or two, but obviously has the benefit of being owned by Kunlun out of China, operating out of Singapore, $5 billion organization behind it. So yeah, if there was a question of resources and depth of pockets, I guess you'd be thinking they might win.
Yeah, that's going to be a real tough hurdle to overcome. Not necessarily impossible. I think that it's going to be winner takes most rather than winner takes all. So there still will be space for competitors out there. And maybe that does come down to, like I said, you know, picking a niche and going for that. I'd be really interested to know how this particular company got to the numbers that they're on. Where did those customers come from? Who are their power users? Because look, they are doing really well. They turned over 45K last month, 38K of that was profit. They say that they've got really well dialed in ads. You know, are their ads particularly well optimized, or are they just capturing low hanging fruit? There's a million questions I would love to ask the founder of this.
Yeah, they also talk about how they've adjusted some of their marketing spend in recent months, probably in anticipation of trying to improve the profitability for sale. But yeah, they talked about tweaking that for seasonality and also tweaking their compute to optimize there as well. So they're clearly trying to wring out as much profitability as possible, which, you know,
yeah,
with kudos to them. But you know as well as I do that with a B2C offer, yeah, it lives or dies on its visibility and on whether you're filling the funnel. So you have to bleed a lot of customer acquisition cost on your advertising.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not sure what the outgoing split is. So, you know, of the 7K they spent last month, you know, to make that 38K profit, how much of that is going on ads? How much of that is going on, you know, paying for the tokens for the model? Are they using their own model? Is a real big one, actually, that we haven't quite got into yet. You know, is this a proprietary model that they built themselves? Are they picking backing off someone else's? If so, that's a big problem, because are you buying a customer list really from them and the marketing that they've set up rather than any sort of IP?
Yeah, you're buying a burning platform if they're dependent on the third-party API. I mean, everything's built on APIs these days, right? And it's normally about the sort of secret sauce that you've got in how you string all these together and make a unique product from it. But if, heaven forbid, they're just running on the Eureka API, then they're effectively feeding a competitor that could flick them off in, you know, a stroke of a finger. But also, you know, their margin is a little bit limited because they can only arbitrage that so much. You know, hats off to them if they are taking the path of least resistance and they've, you know, put a new skin on a Eureka API and made it their own kind of flavor. Great. But, you know, have they actually built anything proprietary, and are they at risk of kind of losing out to innovators that are pouring loads of money into building, you know, unique features and unique functionality? Don't know. It's quite telling that their public site, it screams lovable. What do you think?
Yeah. We had a chat about this yesterday about sites that you can look at once and tell that they're lovable sites. And I think this is absolutely one of those, which maybe also speaks to other tech debt. Right, you know, if that's the kind of storefront is built on Lovable, which is an absolutely great tool, but perhaps not the homepage for your site that you want. You know, when you're turning over this kind of money,
you put them side by side with others that have built proprietary front ends and therefore kind of lead the user to think they must have built proprietary back ends. There is a stark contrast, but it all speaks to moat. Like, how defensible is this, or is there going to be another clone that pops up, you know, with a Gemini 3 UI bunged over the top of an Eureka API, and then sort of, you know, takes the 700,000 ARR or whatever it is off of these guys at a stroke? It doesn't feel very defensible, does it to you?
No, not particularly. I mean, again, we could be wrong, and they could have built their own proprietary model for this. And it could be that that's where the founder's expertise lies, and that's why they haven't put the time into the front end, potentially. But yeah, it doesn't scream premium build. It doesn't feel particularly defensible. Another important thing to note is, and I'm not quite sure on the language on this from the acquire listing, it says that their churn rate is 10%. And then it has a note next week downwards. Does that mean the churn is getting worse or getting better? Is that so 10% is going down, or I can't.
Yeah, I'd imagine. So the higher churn number, bad. Lower churn number, good. Yeah. So is that 10% a month, I imagine? So that means your users don't last a year?
Well, yeah. Well, you're losing your entire customer base every 10 months, yeah.
Mm. Or is that per annum? Do you know how it's expressed?
Again, I don't know. I'm not quite sure how they listed.
Likewise, users, tell us in the comments. But I it's worrying, and it speaks to that whole DTC kind of cycle of disposability, curiosity. You've just got to find a whole new set of customers next year, which doesn't feel defensible. I wonder what they could do revenue stream wise or model wise to make it stickier, because they're aiming at the creators. They're aiming at people that want to just, you know, do the text to music thing and have songs created, but then that user generated content, well, that's surely got a value to it. How can you monetize that? But none of these folks seem to be doing anything sort of Spotify model on the back of it to monetize the UGC.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I don't know if that's something that they've ever explored, and maybe users aren't that interested in it. I'm not sure. I mean, my mind immediately goes to, and maybe this is just because of my background, goes to moving towards more of a sort of B2B model. Where I think these AI music generation tools have more longevity is in building, you know, intros for podcasts and music for events ambient background loops for indie game developers. These are the kinds of places that I see it having real utility over time when it moves away from being more of a kind of novelty place where I get Homer Simpson to rap a Dr. Dre album, you know, whatever it might be that people seem to be using these for now, I see on Instagram.
That I'd like to hear.
I have seen that one. I'll send you the link. So yeah, maybe that's the kind of direction to take this in. And that's maybe kind of what I was alluding to when I said about, you know, specializing and finding a niche. Maybe that's the way to go with this and to move towards that B2B market. And even then, if they were, you know, built on another platform's tool, you know, if they are using Eureka, it could even be that they build such a solid sort of market within this niche, they could actually be acquired by the competitor and kind of sell that list on. And that could be a move for them or whoever purchases this. That's probably where I would go with it.
Yeah. And this is sort of like the kind of fast follower piece, isn't it? Of like, we weren't the first in the space, but we've done something a bit different.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've now built a bit of a niche following as a consequence of that model or that nuanced difference. So bias because we're annoying and, you know, you'd rather have us than do it yourself. So I wonder if there is an avenue there to kind of make it more B2B and, you know, annual subscriptions rather than monthly and, you know, contractual bits that guarantee them more recurring revenue. That I think is got its merits. But I also think, you know, monetizing the content could be something even more lucrative. But you know, again, that's hard, I suppose.
I think the difficulty there is you're trying to take on the incumbents like Spotify, you know, and as we spoke about earlier, there are AI artists already on Spotify, so you're gonna have to pay to listen to them, right?
Yeah, some more out there and open about it than others. I mean, you got Breaking Rust being a country fan that likes to put on country line radio from time to time. Listening to Breaking Rust break into the scene and be wholly kind of open about the fact that, yeah, I make all these beats with AI. That's quite an eye opener. But then you've got whatever it is, Velvet Sundown, that like, were they, weren't they AI? And I'm still not sure we know. But certainly their imagery suggests. But so I think we're just going to get loads of this, right? And just like it's now becoming impossible to detect generative AI kind of essays and academic work, it's going to become nigh on impossible in the long term to detect creative content like music that's come from AI. So what does that mean for humanity's creative future?
It's difficult because who are the line of defense between sort of AI artists pretend or people using AI to create music and pretending that it's real or not? So I have a friend of mine that owns a record label that I work with, and until he started to get some submissions through that he suspects might be AI. Now his way of weeding those out is talking to the producers and asking them some questions about their method, and if they can't answer some questions on how they made it, then it's more likely that they used AI to generate it, right? So it kind of makes sense. Yeah. But it day and age, you could use a distro kit or something to distribute your own music on Spotify anyway. And if you get picked up by the right playlist, you know, then this, you can generate a profile. No one might ever see your face, and you can just pick up plays and start to bring cash in as well, right? So
I don't know, how much cash could an AI artist actually earn? What does it translate to? If Breaking Rust managed to get 100,000 plays on Spotify, does that translate to what, a meal at Denny's or?
Well, so I think Breaking Rust has had a couple of million. And yeah, so look, I had my artist Spotify wrapped today, and I've had 25,000 plays in the last 6 months, which equated to about 150 quid. It's not a lot of money. So if you scale that up, it could have made 100 grand from 2 million plays for the cost of whatever they've spent on AI music generation credits. Yeah, it's potentially very lucrative. Maybe don't buy a business. Maybe just music generate country music. AI generate country music. Yeah, please don't take that advice.
No. I mean, a lot of country music is very, very formulaic, right? There's a lot of similarity to it, and it comes down to the, you know, the wittiness of the lyrics and this, I guess, the personal brand of the artist. So we're going to be devoid of personal brands here, right? This is that was a sweeping statement, but. We're going to miss that. We're going to get, you know, formulaic music created on the fly by models, but we're going to lose the sort of human story.
Well, I mean, the thing is, are we going to start to get some artists that are actually completely AI generated and people don't know? you know, you can create a character that you can use again and again and again in something like Nano Banana to generate images. If you've got a voice that you've created for this person that you could replicate in 11 Labs or something, you could feasibly have an entire social media caricature and person that releases music, and it would be really hard to tell. I mean, in the old days where, you know, they would generate extra fingers and odd, you know, bits and pieces in the photos, it's really easy to tell someone's AI or not. But these days, it's harder and harder. So I don't know. Something to look out for.
So we've got to expect sort of like a conflation at some point of Tilly Norwood meets Breaking Rust, because there was this whole controversy about Tilly Norwood, wasn't there, that this is this AI actress that isn't really a real person, who's got this massive Instagram following, and is now causing the next writer's strike or actors guild strike in California, because no way you're bringing AI actors to Hollywood. Well, you know, it could be happening, it could be coming. So you know, could you imagine simulated synthetic content of the artist alongside the music? Dystopian, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you think about what's happened with pop music over the last couple of decades, where you do have more sort of manufactured artists, and it's more about sometimes the way that they look than the music they make. They might not even have to make the music very soon, you know, as long as they can go into interviews and prance around in a music video and look great, the music can be taken care of for them, right? Do a bit of lip syncing on stage. Maybe I'm being cynical, but it is worrying.
Well, there's the thing. So touring, you know, these AI artists, you know, how are you going to monetize events? Because most of the actual revenue, most of the income for artists, and we can include simulated artists in this sense, but like, you know, you get it from ticket prices, right? So what are you ticketing?
I suppose that is because you don't make much back from the streams compared to how much it costs to produce an album and to go and spend studio time and pay session musicians and all this kind of stuff. Whereas if you don't have those costs anymore, if you are making, you know, a couple of hundred K from streams a year, that's not bad. You maybe sell a bit of merchandise on the side, and maybe you don't have to tour. Yeah, super interesting stuff. It is a bit scary, but...
Well, let's get back to this listing in particular, because they are at the vanguard, and it's an interesting one. But there's always this growth opportunity section on the acquire.com listings. And this one talks very specifically about basically how you'd have to spend more money on marketing, improve conversion rates, increase content marketing, increase digital marketing, social media marketing, focus on SEO. So basically says spend money where we're reluctant to at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you think that would... I mean, I wonder what the sort of conversion rate might actually be, how much you'd have to hemorrhage on marketing to fill the funnel in order to get that 0.1% conversion from the freemiums.
I think it would have to be some very smart marketing. Like I said, I'd love to get into there and dig into the data and see who their sort of power users are and where that comes from, and maybe just laser focus it there. And then you can still hoover up your hobbyists and, you know, your novelty users that will come in and find it. But I would be loath to go out and do some sort of brand-based marketing for this, because that conversion rate to paid users is just so low in the first place. So yeah, there is probably some room to grow there. I mean, one thing I've been trying to figure out is what their lifetime value is, because at that point we have to work out what an acceptable customer acquisition cost would be.
Yep, agreed. I don't know if they actually disclose that in this listing, do they?
No, they don't.
I don't think so.
The thing that makes it tough to work out is that we've got a bracket. It's 1 to 5,000 subscribers. So that makes the 5x difference on what that customer acquisition cost is, and what the lifetime value is. And we can work out what the CAC is from there. So... yeah, this is going to be a real delve under the hood one. As always, you know, stuff to come out in due diligence if this is the sort of business that appeals to you. Because maybe there is a real good sort of hardcore bedrock of a certain type of user that you could do some real niche-specific advertising to, try and keep those costs low. And all the while, you know, you're getting more and more users through. I would be probably tempted to tighten the freemium model as well. Because how much are they spending on credits for? Like you said, you went in there and you used up all your credits from 5 different songs and you had no intention of ever paying for it, right?
And I may or may not have used a few different email addresses.
Right, okay. So, you know, do you tighten that up so that everyone can create one song for free and you laser focus your marketing on those people that are actually converting? And as the kind of novelty of this dies off, you know, you might, your user base might shrink, but your conversion rate and your subscriber base will grow.
I've just actually found in clicking the see more, thank you acquire.com, lovely bunch of bullet points, 3,715 subscribers currently, $14 average revenue per user, $95 lifetime value, 3.4% refunds.
Okay.
Hard to acquire a customer and get a decent return if you're only getting $95 out of their lifetime use of your product.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to know what the cost of serving that customer is out of that $95. You know, how much does it cost to provide the tokens? Again, this comes back to whether they're using their own model or whether they're paying for tokens from somebody else. And if you are using somebody else's model, the difficulty comes in what happens if your price increases there. You know, you can work all this out based on a 95 quid lifetime value and work out what your customer acquisition cost is. But if suddenly the cost of serving those nut users goes up so much, you could lose your profit in a heartbeat.
So we know it's 80% gross profit or there or thereabouts, assuming there's not a lot of overhead. So yeah, your $14 is effectively costing, that's what, $2.80, whatever it is, to serve them over that average revenue period. So,
well, to sell them and actually to acquire them, I guess, because they are doing some advertising.
Yeah, depends. I mean, is the age old, where do I put the marketing? Is it above the line or below the line?
You know, yeah, true.
But anyway, it's coming out of somewhere. So yeah, interesting opportunity. Who buys it? Who's this ideal for?
For me, it's probably either a strategic buyer that wants an instant sort of AI music capability, or someone that's tucking it in, basically. That's what I think. That's the kind of person that buys this. I don't think it's necessarily a search funder,
or
a first-time acquirer.
Or an independent sponsor, for that matter. I'd be surprised. Feels like it goes to a trade acquirer as a tuck-in. I think you're absolutely right on that front. That's where they're going to get this kind of value from.
I do think if you were a savvy SaaS operator and you'd been a founder before, I feel like you could come in and do a good job with this. Again, once you've looked under the hood and looked at the analytics and figured out who the users are and maybe tried to knock them down on that multiple a bit, I feel like it could work. But yeah, it screams tuck into me.
Yeah, because it's only a part of the process, right? It's you know, it's very good and it's generating the content. And then, you know, it only plays in the player, in the cloud. So I guess there must be a plan for downloading it. You know, what about syndicating it, publishing it, distributing it, monetizing the actual content? It feels like it needs to go to someone that's got that part of the infrastructure nailed down and just needs the content creation piece at the beginning in order to sort of, you know, fuel the funnel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or it goes to like a Genspark or someone like that that has got, you know, just has just collected a whole bunch of different kind of generative AI functionality.
Yeah, or a video creation platform, you know, maybe like your Adobe Express or something like that, and you can generate some backing music to go on the back of your stories or your podcast or something like that, you know, maybe one of those.
Feed.
Yeah, exactly. So something like that, maybe even like a Premiere or DaVinci or something along those lines. So those could be some options.
But again, they probably just directly call the API that this is built on, unless these guys own the API. But
yeah.
Questioning. Yeah. If they owned the API, surely it would be a much bigger revenue play. This is a layer over the top and some fortunate customer acquisition.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, look, we're giving the benefit of the doubt and maybe not, but that is what it seems like. And again, there are some little things that make it seem that way. The not great lovable site over the top. There's just a few little indicators that make it feel like, yeah, this is, like I said, a layer over the top rather than proprietary work.
Yeah. But again, hats off to them for getting up to sort of 700,000 in Rev, making some decent money from it. Why sell it if you could just, you know, work out what the optimum balance is of your customer acquisition spend, what your SEO budget and, you know, what your lead funnel cost will be, and then just have it keep ringing the cash register, even at 60% gross margin or net margin, sorry. Why wouldn't you keep it?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about this, and maybe the founders looked at it this way. So they want 4.3x profit as the multiple. And maybe they just don't feel like they can sustain it for another 4.3 years. Maybe they can sort of see it going off a cliff, and they'd rather get the 2.5 mil now. They don't think that they can extract that from it in the next couple of years without a huge amount of work. You know, maybe they've collected all the low hanging fruit that they can. And the work that I said about, you know, delving into users, and, you know, we looked at improving the marketing and the conversion rates, and maybe they just don't feel like that's worth the time.
Isn't that the net present value paradox that we face all the time? Like, well, if the founder doesn't believe, or the owner currently doesn't believe, that they're going to get that ROI over that period, why would I want to pay that multiple to acquire it? Because I won't earn it back.
Well, yeah, and I think that's where you probably want to knock them down on the multiple. But just because they believe they can't do it doesn't believe there isn't someone out there that can do it. I mean, it doesn't mean there isn't someone out there that could make this work. Yeah. But yeah, I'd probably be haggling fairly hard on that asking price, I think.
So to that end, if you're up for a haggling, does this deal appeal? I mean, you are, you know, obviously from the industry. I mean, does this make you want to run a mile from it, or does this make you want to embrace it with open arms and find $2-4 million behind the couch?
I actually would probably go for this. I'd want to know more. I'd like to go to the next stage of this, because I do think that I do know the industry. I think I've obviously been in SaaS for a long time. I think if there is a decent sort of bedrock of users in there and there's some little nugget that you could run with, then yes, but I would be haggling fairly hard on that asking price. So I think actually it's a yes from me.
Wow, great. Really pleased to hear that. Mm. Well, so in my misspent youth, like everybody, I was in a band, and then I messed about with Ableton and Logic and stuff for ages and thought I was going to be the next Avicii, long before Avicii was born, probably. So you think this would be right in my wheelhouse, but I'm a no.
Okay.
I'm a no on this because I don't think I could guarantee its future for long enough to get my ROI back, to get my original investment back. So that 4 years seems like a long time. And even if I picked it up at 3, I'd feel there's this existential challenge that someone's going to come along and eat my lunch overnight. And I'm going to get this sort of, you know, attritioning of my profitability, because I'm going to have to put more and more money in to fill the top of the funnel, all the while my, you know, I'm on a kind of eroding platform. So I'm a no.
Okay. It's usually the other way around. There's been a couple of times you've been a yes and I've been a no. So there you go. It's an interesting one. It may be more of an interest thing for me. I would just love to know what's happening under the hood there. I do think that the right person could come along and stabilize it enough to start bringing some new users in and improve the conversion while alongside it trying to, you know, go and win some enterprise contracts and go down that B2B route, and it can sustain itself long enough for you to mood it in that direction. But yeah, without looking under the hood, we'll never know.
I genuinely hope that they get a sale on this to somebody that is going to be able to, you know, light the blue touch paper under it and send it to the moon, because it does have a lot of promise, and someone's done the heavy lifting to get it to this far. It just needs, as you say, that time, dedication, and a bit of investment to get it further. And it currently has, according to Acquire, 28 buyers in active conversation with the seller right now. So good luck to them. I think there's a heavy chance that they're probably going to end up exiting this one. And I look forward to hearing that they have. But it's not for me. But if we find that Mr. Lambert is the new owner of a Delaware-based organization,
Yeah, well, hopefully the 28 people they're talking to aren't all tire kickers like me who just want to have a look at what's look at what's going on under the hood. But yeah, I really hope they do. And also, you know, it'd be nice if it wasn't just, you know, the company that gets the most funding does the best in this. I do like to think there probably is a buyer out there that could turn this around and make the most out of this. As much as I do have my reservations over AI generated music, I think for the B2B space, I think this could really work. So yeah, I'll keep an eye on this. If it is the company we think it is, I'll give them a follow on some social platforms and see if anything changes over the next year.
And, you know, your next album could be produced in record time via using their platform.
It'd be a lot less headache.
Indeed. Well, now we understand the unit economics of this. If you just got to get to that easy 2 million listens and you're in clover, you can afford a new car.
If I turn up to the next Buyside Breakdown wearing a cowboy hat, you'll know that I've gone down the AI country music route.
Alfie, nothing would surprise me anymore, mate. And I'm not sure I'd even notice.
Also, that was super interesting. I'd love to know what our listeners feel about this one. You know, is it a yay or a nay? If anybody's got any insight into this particular industry, then please do, as ever, let us know and drop us a comment. Because, yeah, is it a yes or a no for you out there listening to this week's Buyside Breakdown for the M&A Zing?
We'd love to know. Thanks loads for listening to us today. And we look forward to listening to your AI-generated music content very soon.
Excellent.
But until then, keep on crunching.
Keep on crunching.